Well, Carl, we got a lot to do today, so I'll get right to it. President Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin just met in Helsinki, Finland, and the Democrats and the fake news media are having a field day over what Trump should have done. First, they said that he should not meet with Putin at all. Then they proceeded to tell the president what he should say to Putin. Just as with the North Korean dictator, the far left called for the president to be combative, to read them the riot act. Now, what would that accomplish? They simply get up and leave the meeting. What's the alternative to talking with leaders of nations that oppose us? Do we want to just go to war? Diplomacy is conducted in private. You don't conduct diplomacy through the news media. No one knows what was said in the closed-door meeting between Trump and Putin. To jump to conclusions about things you know nothing about is juvenile. Democrats and the fake news media claim that Trump should have demanded that Russia hand over the 12 Russians that Mueller just indicted. But they know that Soviet law does not allow Putin to do that, nor would he do that. Would we hand over Americans to the Russians? The answer is no. We have spies working 24/7, and they're trying to infiltrate Russia as much as they can, just as the Russians do for us. Those who are so surprised that Russia has spies and that those spies are not working 24/7 to affect what happens in the United States are morons. It's time for the hate-filled Democrats and the fake news allies to grow up and deal with reality, not a fantasy land. Now, last week we witnessed a despicable Democrat liar named Peter Strzok sit before a congressional committee and take them and the American people for complete fools. Strzok is, of course, the high-ranking FBI official who was having an affair with an FBI colleague named Lisa Page. The two of them were exposed by a long series of emails and texts in which they detailed their efforts to ignore Hillary Clinton's felonies in order to keep her eligible for a presidential run and their clandestine efforts to keep Donald Trump from becoming president of the United States. Strzok insulted our intelligence by claiming that he always told the truth, while at the same time admitting that he lied to his wife and family about his affair with Page. He then proceeded to say that he never let his personal feelings lead to bias. How ignorant is that statement? The man demeaned Americans by saying in his texts that he could smell Trump supporters in a Walmart. He and Page made it clear that they and their elite cohorts at the FBI and Justice Department would stop Trump from becoming president. When asked by Congress to explain that email to Page, assuring her that, quote, "we will stop him," unquote, Strzok claimed that he meant the American people would stop Trump. That's not what he had said. He had said clearly, "we will stop him." And we've since found out that others at the top of the FBI, people like Andrew McCabe, were part of Strzok's "we." Strzok just smirked and dodged questions throughout it all, saying that the FBI would not allow him to answer. This pathetic man is still on the FBI payroll, and that's how he was able to avoid answering truthfully. The fact that he is still employed by the FBI falls directly on Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who has allowed this media circus to go on far too long. Strzok and Lisa Page should both have been fired when their interoffice affair surfaced. That alone is grounds for dismissal at the FBI. I have tried to give Jeff Sessions the benefit of the doubt, but I am now firmly convinced the man is way over his head and totally ineffective. Trump should fire Sessions if he won't step down and appoint South Carolina Congressman Trey Gowdy to replace Sessions. Perhaps an even greater injustice was done to the American public by Democrats on that committee who viewed Strzok as a hero. One disreputable Democrat on the committee said that Strzok should be given the Purple Heart, an honor reserved for military heroes who have given their lives or been wounded in defense of our country. What a slap in the face of those servicemen and women and their families. Other Democrats tried to disrupt the testimony. Not one single Democrat spoke up against the actions of Strzok and Page. Not one. Talk about bias. Democrats had it on full display in their mad zeal to protect Strzok and the Obama administration. Back in 2014, Republican Congressman Devin Nunes warned that the Russians were attempting to undermine the United States election process. Devin Nunes is a Republican. He warned. Now, who was president in 2014? Bingo. Barack Hussein Obama. And what did Obama do about it? He says he told Vladimir Putin to, quote, knock it off, end quote. Now, there's a directive designed to be ignored, and Putin redoubled his efforts to have a hand in the 2016 election. Obama and his administration knew that Russia was attempting to have a hand in the election, and key Democrats, if not all Democrats in Congress, knew it as well. They didn't worry about it at the time because they were convinced that Hillary Clinton would have no trouble beating Donald Trump. And Hillary, once in office, would cover all their tails. They underestimated the number of Hillary's detestables and their desire to drain the swamp in Washington, a swamp in which Hillary wanted to be the head alligator. None of these Democrats ran howling to the fake news media about Obama's limp-wristed non-action to stop or curtail the Russian interference. Several Russian operatives have been named and indicted for interference in the election, but the Justice Department statement from Rod Rosenstein made it clear that no Americans, including Donald Trump, were involved. Thus, after a year or more of Special Investigator Robert Mueller's witch hunt, at a cost to the American taxpayers of tens of millions of dollars, no evidence whatsoever has shown collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. The best we have heard is that Putin favored Trump over Clinton. If so, why did the Clinton Foundation receive millions of dollars from Russia? But truthfully, Putin did dislike Hillary Clinton more than Trump because Putin had seen her unethical, lying persona up close and personal. He wasn't sure about Trump, but he was sure about Hillary Clinton. That was not because of anything Trump said or did. It was all because of what the devious Hillary Clinton had done. Republicans on the committee came down hard on Peter Strzok, but in my view, not hard enough. No reasonable person can conclude that Strzok and Page were not evil, conniving traitors, spending countless biased hours on email and text with one another while on the government's payroll. That alone is enough to fire them. As for the delirious Democrats on the committee who were overzealous in trying to protect Strzok, and by implication, Barack Hussein Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Loretta Lynch, and others, their own bias was evident. This is not your father's Democrat Party. It has been seized by a radical band of far-left zealots who wish to take America into socialism. You may be a Democrat, but are you a socialist? Are you proud of the leadership of the party today? Can you not see that they offer no answers to problems in the country, just hate for Donald Trump? Hate and resistance is their only agenda. No human being is wrong 100% of the time, but Democrats have opposed anything and everything proposed by Trump 100% of the time. If you're comfortable with that truth and wish to continue supporting Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Maxine Waters, socialist Bernie Sanders, and far-left loon Elizabeth Warren when they are a threat to our country, then you have to live with that for the rest of your life. If these devious Democrats succeed, your children and grandchildren can look forward to a life under socialism. To see what that looks like, pay attention to Venezuela, a socialist disaster that Bernie Sanders held up as the ideal just a few short years ago. Inflation there was at 46,305% in June 2018 and rising. The people there are eating snakes, rats, and zoo animals just to stay alive. A coffin used to cost about 720 bolivars. Today, that's the cost of one loaf of bread. A dozen eggs cost $150 in Venezuela today. Infant mortality rates are the lowest ever. If you think that Venezuela is the only socialist country to fail like this, think again. They've all failed. While socialism has been tried many times before, it has never succeeded. That is the track record that liberal Democrats at the head of the party want us to follow. I will not go willingly, and neither should you. Edwin Benson of the American Society for the Defense of Tradition, Family, and Property wrote an article from which I borrow in today's commentary. His insight and research struck me as right on. The topic, why is socialism still popular in the United States? Most Americans hear the word socialism and have a vague idea of its principles, but don't fully understand the deeper dangers of it. If you'll stay tuned, I'll break it down in common sense language. If ever there was a set of ideas that have been tried and found lacking, it is socialism. It has been tried on every single continent. It has been tried in weak nations and strong. It has been tried in primitive countries and those which are highly developed. The most striking thing about socialism is that it has never worked. We in the United States have been tinkering with socialism ever since the Great Depression of the 1920s. Its most successful manifestation, Social Security, operates on a basis that would see any other investment manager in jail for running a Ponzi scheme. The Veterans Administration, organized to provide government assistance to those injured in the service of the country, is a bloated bureaucracy whose many errors would land any private physician in bankruptcy court. Lyndon Johnson employed soaring rhetoric about a war on poverty, but those programs have done little but ensure that three generations of the impoverished families of 1964 are still poor. However, the free enterprise traditions of the United States have prevented socialism from becoming our predominant economic system, at least so far. So, what about those nations that embraced socialism far more totally? In its latest troubling manifestations, as in Northern Europe, it saps nations of their economic and intellectual potential. Great Britain was the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution, but its industrial capacity has been on a steady decline since its flirtation with socialism in 1945. Australia and the Scandinavian nations are often touted as places in which cradle-to-grave socialism has improved the lives of their people, but they are no paradise either. Cast North America and Europe aside, and the record goes from unfortunate to dismal. Brazil has massive natural resources, and yet it's a very poor nation. Most African nations adopted some form of socialism after gaining independence and remain impoverished today. Venezuela's turn to socialism has been an economic disaster of epic proportions. And just a few years ago, five in fact, future Democrat presidential contender Bernie Sanders described socialist-ruled Venezuela as a more suitable exemplar of the American dream than the United States. In an essay lamenting what he described as the intractable income inequality of the American economy, Loony Bernie said this: "These days, the American dream is more apt to be realized in South America, in places such as Ecuador, Venezuela, and Argentina, where incomes are actually more equal today than they are in America." But despite receiving trillions of dollars in oil revenue over the past decades, Venezuela is in the midst of an unprecedented economic collapse, owing precisely to the redistributionist programs that Sanders has extolled as a model for the U.S. economy. Grocery shelves there are empty. Hospitals have no access to vital medicines. Rationing is underway, and riots have begun to happen in the streets. It takes one American dollar to give you 119,900 bolivars. $1, and they've got to have 119,900 bolivars. You have to go down to the grocery store if you can find one with a wheelbarrow to carry your money, not your groceries. Ecuador's president, Rafael Correa, is preparing to leave a country mired in a deep recession and facing its own currency crisis. Like Venezuela, Ecuador has been ruled by a socialist government that was able to subsidize its social engineering projects through oil revenues. The end of the inflated oil boom has left the government without the means of paying for its social programs. And as Correa prepares to leave office, his successor is Vice President Lenin Moreno. He used a recent earthquake as a pretext for a huge tax increase. Argentina, the third of Bernie Sanders' economic role models, is a country with immense natural and industrial wealth that has seen its economy strip-mined by a kleptocratic government. Under President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, the government's official statistics agency, INDEC, released a steady stream of lies to disguise the country's decline, which were accepted at face value by credulous people like Bernie Sanders. Now that Kirchner is out of office, INDEC has corrected those statistics, and the story they tell about Argentina's economic reality is frightening. Argentina is now poorer than the Chinese, the Bulgarians, the Azerbaijanis, Turkmen, Mexicans, Malaysians, and Gabonese, not to mention their neighbors in Brazil. They are barely better off than those in Botswana and war-torn Libya. So much for recommendations from Bernie Sanders. And of course, no description of the waves, or the woes, rather, of socialism would be complete without including its most famous practitioners, Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong, Pol Pot, and Adolf Hitler. Yes, Hitler was a socialist, despite the left's attempt to claim that fascism is a right-wing phenomenon. Remember, Nazi was short for National Socialist. The untold millions that met their deaths and the massive destruction that occurred under these socialist leaders defies the imagination. So why is socialism enjoying a popular upsurge in the United States? First of all, it just sounds good. Karl Marx's famous prescription, "From each according to his ability, to each according to his need," resonates in the soul of many. Listen to a student choir sing John Lennon's socialist anthem, "Imagine." That brotherhood of man line was an undeniable appeal even for those who know better. It would just be so nice, so peaceful, so happy if it really worked. The second reason is the little explained and examined fact that most Americans today have spent the first two decades of their lives living the socialist dream. There is no more socialist segment of our society than public education. The system in taxpayer-supported buildings, books, furniture, food, and the teachers themselves provided regardless of the student's individual merits or ability to pay. All of the items I just mentioned are provided through a bureaucracy which determines the quality of each of those items without regard to the individual preferences of the students or individual contributions from the students. We can also see in our schools one of the great flaws of socialism. Any system in which the basic decisions are made elsewhere breeds indifference. Our public school system is a great machine with little regard for the individual. The student comes to know that they are unimportant to the school as a person. They move through the required courses and the required number of electives until graduation. The school goes on the same way whether he or she are there or not. Teachers and administrators may jump to disagree, but the students know the truth. In such a world, every impulse is to meet the minimum standard. Even the students demand, when the students are demanding high grades, they wonder how little work they'll have to do in order to get that A. If the parents don't demand it, nobody else does. The kid who passes by the skin of their teeth gets the same diploma as the valedictorian. Maybe the Honor Society members get an extra cord to wear on their gown, but underachievers seem to be able to get along quite nicely without that cord. Actual learning means about as little to the top students as it does to those who squeak by with AD success, which means complying with the minimum standards of the system. Another reason that socialism is becoming more popular is that it feels good without requiring any sacrifice from the individual. After all, taking care of others is the very essence of benevolence, right? A socialist can indulge the sense that they are taking care of the downtrodden without having to give up anything that they value. Consider the muted reaction to the story that Bernie Sanders, the self-professed Democrat socialist, owns 3 homes and has a net worth of more than $1 million. His supporters either ignored that news or quibbled about the details. Setting aside the specifics of the number of houses or their value, it remains that Sanders is in an enviable position economically. How could the Sanders supporters overlook so seemingly obvious a flaw? Simple. It's where their heads are as well. Today, college socialists do not want to deprive themselves of the pleasures of life in their search for utopia. Most of them are in college because a college degree promises more financial prosperity. Regardless of the fact that this promise is often unmet, the typical social justice warrior prizes their own comforts just as much as the chairman of the college Republicans. Yet the socialist signals a sense of virtue while being able to dismiss those on the right as greedy. The third reason that socialists continue to carry their banner proudly may be the most important: pure, undiluted arrogance. The problem with socialism, they cry, is that it hasn't been done properly. Listen to us, the young, the pure, the good. We know how to fix the socialist mistakes of the past. We can cure the injustices. We can raise up the poor. Pardon me. Try to expand the knowledge base of the blissfully arrogant by mentioning the abuses of Mao, Stalin, Castro, or Che Guevara, and most will look confused at first. Eventually, they'll come up with a reply. It is most likely to resemble this: "We're not like that. Those are dead men. Their actions are in the past. We won't make the mistakes they made. We have not been corrupted by the world." Of course, the college-educated will disguise their arrogance under other words that assert their massive intelligence. They dismiss working-class conservatives as dupes who work against their own interest. Western culture, which created the universities in which these socialists work and learn, is the creation of dead white men as a toll to subjugate females and those of other races, they think. If you defend the idea that Western culture created the concepts of freedom that they supposedly espouse, and you will have committed microaggressions against them. The enlightened ones can no longer tolerate your hate speech. Make an argument based on logic, and you'll be dismissed as ignorant. How can these young socialists avoid the mistakes of the past, as they claim? They can't, because they can't get around the fact that socialism is inherently unjust. In 1878, Pope Leo XIII correctly assessed the evils of socialism. This goes back to 1878, when the Pope said this: "Inasmuch as the socialists seek to transfer the goods of private persons to the community at large, they make the lot of all wage earners worse, because in abolishing the freedom to dispose of our own wages, they take away from them, by this very act, the hope and the opportunities of increasing their property and securing advantages for themselves. inasmuch as the socialists, therefore, disregard care by parents and in its place introduce care by the state, they act against natural justice and dissolve the structure of the home. The equality conjured up by the socialist imagination would, in reality, be nothing but uniform wretchedness and meanness for one and all without distinction. It is perceived that the fundamental principle of socialism, which would make all possessions public property, is to be utterly rejected because it injures the very ones who it seeks to help, contravenes the natural rights of individual persons, and throws the functions of the state and public peace into confusion. So said Pope Leo XIII in 1878. Nothing about socialism has changed since that time. It cannot be said that Pope Leo was speaking as some sort of hidebound reactionary, longing for a time in which the peasants did as they were told, because he also spoke movingly about the obligations of employers and the rights of the workers. Clearly, this was no passing fancy on the part of Leo XIII, but a well-considered opinion developed over a considerable amount of time. Any moderately intelligent adult can look at the plight of socialism's many victims and easily conclude whose vision of life under socialism was more informed. Socialism has eaten deeply into the intellectual fiber of modern life. Many are they who knowingly or not buy into Karl Marx's assertion that the victory of socialism is inevitable. They can be found in our universities and labor unions, in schools, and in the halls of Congress. The apologists for socialism have many tools at their command. The fake news media will be happy to show the travails of the poor and the unemployed in the United States. They're happy to use their rhetorical skills in socialism's behalf, as we saw in the debate over Obamacare, when the lack of health care was presented as the lack of health care itself. The socialist supposed compassion is trotted out to make the working stiffs who want to keep a few more of their dollars they earned look like short-sighted hicks, clinging to, as Barack Hussein Obama famously put it, their God, their guns, and their Bibles. Of course, the anti-socialist has a less obvious but far more important weapon. It's a weapon whose effect can be delayed but never denied. That weapon is called truth, and socialism cannot ultimately defeat it. For those of us who understand what socialism is, we must proclaim the evils of this inherently evil ideology and stop it before it stops us.